thanks. Yeah. Okay, so I guess I can start now. So today I'm going to tell you about something we learned about topological order by studying the many-body entanglement structure of quantum states. And because of this approach we take, there has been many interactions with quantum information ideas, and I guess I'll comment about that. So when I give this talk to other condensed matter group, I usually hide this quantum information part, but I guess I don't have to do this here. Okay, I guess this mic doesn't help. So, I can try, I can speak loud. Yeah, so this is not a louder speaker, this is just for recording, I guess. Okay, so I'll be talking about what is topological order, just to set the language, and then about what the question is and what we have done about it, and then I'll comment about this many-body entanglement approach and how it's related to quantum information. What's this? Okay, so I guess people here are familiar with the idea of topological order, but I just want to a quick review so that make sure we are all speaking the same language. So a general question people in condensed matter ask is, in what kind of phases does matter exist? So the simplest one may be the liquid, then solid. And we know that they're different because they're different phases of, for example, water. And another example may be that the carbon can form a diamond or it can form a graphite, and these two are different phases of carbon. So a common feature of these classical phases is that you raise the temperature and you change from one phase to the other. And also that when phases change, there's always a change of symmetry in the system. So this is called the symmetry breaking order in the system. Excuse me. So for example, this liquid is translational invariant in space. But however, solid breaks this translational symmetry into a lattice translation. And diamond and graphite actually breaks the symmetry in different ways, so they're different phases. And this kind of situation also happens in quantum system. For example, you can have a quantum paramagnet, which is spatial rotationally invariant, but a ferromagnet choose a particular direction to point to and breaks this rotational symmetry of space. And another one may be insulator and superconductor. Going from insulator and superconductor, you lose the charge conservation symmetry of the system. The only thing different from the classical phase is that quantum phase transition can actually happen at zero temperature. So you actually don't need to add heat to the system in order for the phase transition to happen. There are quantum fluctuations that you can just control some parameters and the phase transition change from one phase to the other at zero temperature. And this is the symmetry breaking order that happens in quantum system. But quantum system have more possibilities, and that is the topological order I'm going to focus on today. And was discovered when people were studying ultra-cold electrons when they put it in a very low temperature and in high magnetic field. And people found that these electron system, two-dimensional electron gas, can be in a quantum Hall system, that it forms an exactly quantized transverse conductivity at these plateaus. And actually, when you transform from one plateau to the other, there's a phase transition in between. So these two are different phases. And a recent discovery is this normal insulator to topological insulator transition. And people found that these two, if you want to go from one to the other, there's a phase transition. But however, there's no symmetry accompanying these kind of phase transitions, because the plateaus at different value, they have the same symmetry. And also, when you go from a normal insulator to a topological insulator, the system both have time reversal symmetry, and neither of them break the time reversal symmetry, but yet they belong to different phases. So this is the topological order I'll be talking about. So a generic feature, the most general feature of a topological order, when we say the word topological order, especially when I'm talking here, I mean that There's no symmetry breaking in the system. So the system have a certain order, but it's not because of symmetry breaking. But this is like a very general statement. There are more specific features of topologically ordered system. That is when you put the system on an open geometry. That means in one dimension, you put it on a segment. On two dimension, you put it on a disk. And in three dimension, you put it on a ball. And then you will find this special feature of topological order, because in the bulk of the system, there will be a gap that this is the ground state, and there is a finite gap between the ground state and the first excited state. But on the boundary of the system, so in one dimension it's the endpoints, in two dimensions it's the boundary, and three dimensions it's the surface. On the boundary of the system, you will find there's a degeneracy or a gapless excitation on the surface. So this is a more specific feature of topological order system. And this happens in many topological systems. For example, this 1D Haldane chain is an example of one-dimensional topological order. And if you look at the bulk of the system, you'll find it's gapped. But at the boundary, you'll find the fourfold degeneracy of the system. And quantum Hall also. Quantum Hall, this plateau is actually due to the chiral edge state at the boundary of the system. And in topological insulator also, you will find on the edge, there are spins pointing in different directions and winding in different in counterclockwise or clockwise propagation. And in the spectrum, you can see explicitly that these are the edge state propagating on the edge. And in the bulk, the spectrum is gapped. This is the conduction band, this is the valence band. So there have been exciting discoveries about topological order in the last decades. The Haldane chain was proposed in 1983 and later soon discovered. And the more exciting ones, the discovery of quantum Hall is actually first experimentally discovered, and then there have been many theoretical understandings ever since. And more recently, this theoretical proposal of topological insulator and following experimental discovery have created much excitement in the condensed matter community, both in 3D and in 2D. But then we got impatient. We don't want this topological order system to come to us one by one, and we just want to ask the general question, what kind of topological order can exist in general? So beyond quantum Hall, beyond topological insulator, what kind of topological order should we be expecting? So we want a general understanding in any dimension for system with any symmetry. Can you tell me what kind of topological order should be there? And amazingly, this question actually has been answered, at least in part. For this free fermion system, there has been this classification by Kitaev and this Schneider and all. And they actually have a table for all of the kinds of topological insulator that's possible in any dimension D equal 1, 2, 3, and with any kind of symmetry. So this is the table they have. This is very nice, but free fermion only account for a small part of all the system we consider, because there can be interactions between the particles. There can be Coulomb repulsion or whatever between the electrons. So the more general question is that what kind of topological order can exist in most general interacting systems? And so now we have this diagram, phase diagram for free fermion system. But this can be not complete understanding, because the general phase diagram will look like this. And in particular, there can be new phases that's not possible in the free fermion system and only appears in the interacting system. There have been many work on this. And also, Kitaev also found that several phases within the free fermion classification can actually belong to the same phase when you consider interacting, when you consider interaction in the system. So this phase diagram can be misleading. So the question we want to ask today is, what kind of topological order can exist in general interacting systems? So we want the phase diagram of this bigger square. OK, so we actually have been able to obtain results in some for some part of topological order. And we actually can, in particular, classify all of the one-dimensional gapped topological order. And moreover, we can systematically construct two-dimensional topological orders. And I will show you how. So first is, how can we possibly classify one-dimensional topological order? This is because there's a very nice structure of one-dimensional gap system that's in the ground state. And this actually have been the result of a serious work depending on this matrix product representation, but I'm not going to talk about that representation. I'm just going to give you a picture of why this is true. So consider a one-dimensional system on a chain, and this is a lattice system, and on each lattice side there's some degrees of freedom. There's a spin or boson mode. And so the system is interacting locally, and all the degrees of freedom will be correlated with each other like this. And there can be any kind of interaction, so I'm just drawing some random correlations. But because of the system is interacting locally, and moreover it has a gap, there is a very special feature of this kind of system that the correlation can only be finite range. That means for each particle, it can only be correlated with something that's nearby, but not very far away. So let's just consider the case that we have a correlation length of 4. So each particle is only correlated to distance within 4, but not far further than that. And because of this, we can just group the degrees of freedom together into big blocks like this. And if we do that, then degrees of freedom within each block will only be correlated with the ones that's in the nearest neighbor block, but not over that because that's too far away. And if this is the case, then we can just do some unitary transformation to the degrees of freedom in each block and reorganize them and relabel the basis, basically. And then we can find that we can turn a state into something like this. We can do some unitary transformation such that the degrees of freedom within each block will split into two parts. And the two parts has no correlation with each other because we basically remove the correlation within each block. And then, but however, the blocks, the degrees of freedom will be correlated with something outside. In particular, the right degrees of freedom will be correlated to the right of the chain, and the left degrees of freedom will be correlated to the left of the chain. And basically, the whole chain will split into a chain of dimers like this.
Why dimers? Why four pieces or 18 pieces
each? Yeah, so, of course. This can be, for example, this can be two particles, and this can be two particles, and four of them entangled together.
This particular dimerization actually is not important.
It is important. So if you have two here, we just combine them, and it looks like one. So but basically, it's just saying that there's entanglement or correlation between nearest neighbors, and that can only be two body.
When you say dimer, do you mean maximum entangled?
Not necessarily. It can be any kind of entanglement. It can be not entangled also. And this comes from the matrix product state rim normalization idea. So all I'm saying is just a picture, but I guess I can persuade you that this is true. So so this is actually saying that for all the gap system, if you look at the system at large enough length scale, meaning I take large enough blocks and reorganize the degrees of freedom, the ground state will look like this. So it's always a big set of blocks, and then there are 2 degrees of freedom within each block, and they will form dimers like this. But you can say, yeah, this is still trivial because I can do some unitary transformation to the dimer and disentangle them. Just as we always do in quantum information, we can put the dimer into a complete product state just like this. And if we do that, then the system becomes totally classical, and it seems no reason for topological order to exist. And that's actually true. And this is the reason that we say that every gapped ground state in one-dimensional system can be mapped to a classical state. And actually, that's why we say there's no intrinsic topological order in one dimension. So if you allow any kind of deformation to the local degrees of freedom, you can allow any relabeling of basis, then you can achieve this, and you can remove, you can say that there's no intrinsic topological order in one dimension. This is rather boring, but the things get more interesting if you consider symmetry in the system. Suppose this is a simplest example of one-dimensional topological order, the Haldane chain or the AKLT model. If you consider, for example, the spin rotation symmetry, in the system, then things will be quite different. So consider an example like this. You have big sites, and each site contains two spin 1/2, like this. And each spin 1/2 will form a singlet with another spin 1/2 on a neighboring site. A singlet is like this. So if the system doesn't have spin rotation symmetry, you can disentangle the singlet and put it into a product state. But however, if spin rotation symmetry is preserved, then you cannot do this step because this will break spin rotation symmetry, and it chooses a particular direction to point to. And actually, if you want to preserve this SO3 symmetry, there's no way you can disentangle the singlet into product states. And this means that this kind of entanglement is protected. And it actually gives topological order. And according to our the feature of topological order we talked about before, this is exactly a topological order system, because in the bulk of the system, it is gapped, because the bulk of the system is just composed of singlets. And there's a gap between the singlets and all the triplet excitations. So there's a gap in the bulk of the system. But however, there will be a 3 degrees of freedom at the end if you put the system on a segment, not a ring. You will find there are spin 1/2 sitting at the end of the chain. And these spin 1/2s, you cannot break the degeneracy of this two-dimensional system, because you want rotational symmetry. And if you want to keep that symmetry, these two states will be exactly degenerate at the boundary. So there will be twofold degeneracy here and twofold degeneracy here. And in all, you will have fourfold degeneracy if you have a finite segment of the system. And this is actually what we call a symmetry-protected topological order. So if you don't require symmetry, this is a trivial system. But however, if you require SO3 symmetry, this system has topological order, and you cannot break the degeneracy on the boundary. And actually, if you compare this with another system, which is composed of spin 1 in the same structure, but it's just spin 1, and spin 1 forming singlet between each other, and you will see the difference by just looking at the boundary of the system. In the bulk, everything is just singlets, and you don't see any difference. But however, on the boundary, you will see that one of them is a spin 1/2, and one of them is a spin 1, and that's the difference between these two systems, and actually, they have different topological orders. So based on this picture, we can actually cut.
Sorry. Yeah. Could you repeat the last statement?
Yes.
Yes. So are these two systems different in the bulk at all? I mean, are these spin 1/2? Or what are these two systems?
So this one is spin 1 of two spin 1/2 per side. This is two spin 1 per side.
Okay, so they have different Hamiltonian and so on.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, just check.
But so they can be in the same system. I'm just talking about the ground state, so you can think of these to be embedded in a larger Hilbert space locally. But this is just the degrees of freedom that appear in the low energy sector. So for example, in the AKLT state, you look at each side as a spin 1, but actually you can think of it as composed of two spin 1.
Right, so this is already the fixed point of the energy flow, and then these are two different fixed points. Is that what you are describing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't get it. So the spin 1/2 is different from spin 1 only by, you know, coefficient in front of the very phase, right? One is an integer, one is half integer.
Actually, the difference is deeper, so I actually didn't tell you, and that's the part I can't hide anymore. So actually, spin 1/2 and spin 1 are very different under spin rotation symmetry, because spin 1/2, when you rotate by 2 pi, it gets a minus 1. But spin 1, you rotate.
Yeah.
Exactly, so that's the point. You cannot change smoothly from spin 1/2 to spin 1. So if you consider this kind of spin rotation symmetric ground state, you always have a edge state at the end. But it's either spin half integer or spin integer. So you always have a minus 1 or a 1, but you cannot smoothly change between minus 1 and 1. That's a very good point. And that's actually connected to the projective representation of the symmetry group, which I didn't put it here. So that's exactly the crucial point that we can get the classification that this is related to the projective representation of the symmetry group. So here we have a table of all the possible topological orders that we can find in a gapped one-dimensional system. So if you don't have symmetry, there's no topological order. And if you have SO3 symmetry, there are two. And if you have time reversal, there are two. So for whatever kind of symmetry, we can find how many topological orders there is. And this kind of topological order, you can detect it by just in the example I gave before, by looking at the boundary of the system, see how it transforms under symmetry. Yes.
I remember you said there is no topological order without symmetry in one dimension.
Yes.
But you say here on the table, you said there is one.
Oh, that means the trivial one. Sorry. I should. So for the non-trivial topological order, it should be zero. So everything should be minus one.
So when you say two means that one is trivial and one is non-trivial.
Yeah. So the spin one half one is non-trivial and spin one is trivial. So actually, we have been able to find more topological order with this time reversal and D2 symmetry. And we propose how to realize in atomic system and how to detect them by looking at the boundary of the system. Yes?
Is this on? How do you know when to stop? How do you know that you have found everything and it's time to move to, you know, to a different problem?
Yeah, so this is... this is due to a series of work in this matrix product state formalism. So people actually have been able to prove, maybe this is not mathematically totally rigorous, but I think physicists believe that every gapped ground state in one-dimensional system can be well described by a matrix product state. And that's where we stop. So we just look at all the finite dimensional matrix product state that has a finite correlation length. And that's where we believe that we have all the 1D physics covered.
I see. So it gets probably progressively more difficult when you move in higher dimensions, right?
Yeah. So I'll show you how we generalize to higher dimension. That's the rest of the talk.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
So the next thought will be to go to two dimension, 3 dimension will be more interesting because there has been this excitement about topological order. So you not only have about topological insulator. So you not only have this degeneracy at the edge, you actually have gapless excitations on the boundary of the system, which can give you transport and give you more exciting measurement to be done. So we would like to ask, how can we understand, for example, topological insulator from a similar picture? And we try to generalize the one-dimensional picture to two-dimension. And the simplest generalization will be like this. So you have each site on a square lattice, you will have 4 spin 1/2 per site. And each spin 1/2 will form a singlet with another spin 1/2 on a neighboring site. So in all, this is a square lattice of dimers connected like this. And actually, this state is trivial if you don't require symmetry, because everything can, again, be disentangled. But if you require spin rotation symmetry, this is the AKLT model in two dimensions and has a topological order in some sense. And actually, if you look at the bulk of the system, everything is paired into singlets. And there's a gap between singlet and triplet. So the bulk of the system is gapped. But if you look at the boundary of the system, we will find that there are 3 spin 1/2 degrees of freedom on the boundary, just like in one dimension. And so on the boundary of the system will be a ring of spin 1/2s going around like this. But the spin 1/2s, they can interact with each other because they're quite close to each other. They're not very far away. So if you introduce a generic interaction, for example, the Heisenberg interaction between the spin 1/2 in the system, you will find there's a gapless spectrum on the boundary. And that's the topological feature we are looking for, because the bulk of the system is gapped and the boundary is gapless. But however, there's one tricky point. Oh, sorry. I want to mention that if you do the projection of each site to the spin 2 subspace, this is actually the two-dimensional AKLT model people have been studying for several decades. But there's one tricky point to this model, because if you break the translational symmetry by adding disorder to the boundary of the system, you can actually open up a gap in the spectrum, because you can just pair all the spin 1/2s into singlets again. And on the boundary, if you pair everything up into a dimer chain, then there will be, again, a gap between singlet and triplet.
I have a question. So even before introducing this order, if you project onto spin 2, mm-hmm. which is what you said you would do, do you still keep a gapless H mode then?
You're asking whether two-dimensional AKLT model is gapped.
No, I think on the edges.
On the edge.
On the edge.
Yes, I think on the edge. There are some work. I know people did some numerical work about the effective theory on the boundary, and they find it's something like this Heisenberg spin 1/2 chain.
Right, but you can introduce this interaction on the boundary, right? Once you've projected. I mean, would you introduce an interaction on the boundary?
Yeah, so it's some kind of effective interaction, yeah. And it would be something like this. And it's gapless spectrum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people do numerics about it. Mm. Yes.
Sorry, but what do you exactly mean by disorder in this case?
So if you don't require the interaction between these boundary spin 1/2 to be translational invariant.
So why isn't it done in like a spin glass basically?
Spin glass,
yeah. Disordered spin system, they form spin glasses.
Here I'm focusing on the case where there's a single isolated ground state and there are a gap between all the excited. So I'm not talking about spin glass. I'm just talking about a translational symmetry breaking system, that possibility. So there can be spin glass, yes.
All right.
Yeah. I'm talking about the other possibility that you can have a single gapped ground state and the finite gap to all the excitations. So this is the possibility that by explicitly or spontaneously break the translational symmetry in the system, you can actually gap the spectrum. So this is different from a topological insulator. If we compare these two models, we will find they're similar in this first three sense, but not in the last one. So they both have a gap in the bulk of the system, yes. But they both have gapless excitation on the boundary. However, the gapless excitation, they both cannot be destroyed by breaking. They both can be destroyed by breaking symmetry. So for this AKLT model, if you break rotational symmetry, you can destroy the gapless mode. And for the topological insulator, if you break time reversal symmetry, you can open up a gap in the edge state. You can destroy the gapless mode. But however, the difference is that in AKLT model, you can break the boundary modes by adding disorder to the system. But in topological insulator, you cannot. So topological insulator people did experiment that you even add disorder to the system, there are still gapless excitations. And this is also the case for like quantum Hall system, that you add disorder, you cannot break the boundary modes. So this is not exactly the kind of two-dimensional topological order we are looking for. So this naive generalization of one-dimensional two-picture to two-dimension doesn't really work. So do we have a picture for two-dimensional topological order that we can have?
Yes. Sorry, could you clarify this? The disorder that you are adding to break the order? The disorder that you would be adding to the AKLT, mm-hmm. would that be in the bulk or in the boundary?
It doesn't matter. If you only add it deep in the bulk, it won't affect the boundary. But if you add distribute normally, and then it will affect the boundary, then it will open
but
a gap.
But if you only put it at the boundary, would that?
Yeah, yes.
OK, thank you.
So actually, this is because we only did a naive generalization from one-dimensional to two-dimensional. And we actually haven't considered the most general picture available in two dimensions. So in two dimension, we can repeat the argument that we use in one dimension. We will find something more. So this is a two-dimensional lattice with degrees of freedom on each lattice site. And again, the degrees of freedom are locally interacting with each other. And they have a gap to all the excitations. So first I need to mention that this is just an argument in order to get my systematic construction. This is not like in 1D. So in one dimension, this matrix product state is very rigorous and is complete, and people believe that it's everything. But here I'm just giving an argument about what is possible in two dimension. So again, the degrees of freedom can be correlated with each other like this, randomly. But they have a finite correlation length. So I can block degrees of freedom into big squares. And then the degrees of freedom will only be correlated with the ones in the nearest neighbor block. But unlike in one dimension, where each degrees of freedom is only going to be correlated with one block, here, for example, in the middle of the block, there can be degrees of freedom correlated with up and left at the same time. So this is saying that if I do the usual trick like I did in one dimension, I reorganize the degrees of freedom within each block, I can split them into four like this. But this one will be correlated to up and left at the same time, this one to up and right, this one to right and down, this one to left and down. So in all, the system will break into loops like this, not in dimers. So in one dimension, we only have dimers. But in two dimension, we need loops to cover the two-dimensional surface. So this is a more general kind of entanglement structure that you can think of in two dimension beyond the dimer covering of the system. And actually, this is the starting point for us to construct our CZX model. So this is the name I gave it. And it's actually quite related to the quantum information unitary gates, the control Z gate. I will show you why. But so based on this entanglement structure, we can construct a new topological order in two-dimensional system that is beyond this topological insulator, topological superconductor understanding, because this is an interacting system. So let me show you how this example works. So here, every dot represents a two-level particle, a 0 and 1. And each side have four of them. So this big circle is a site. Each side has four two-level particles. And these four-level particles, they are entangled into these plaquettes. So these plaquettes, the plaquette is between the site, but the plaquette is just 0, 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, 1. It is an entangled state among four particles. This is a very simple state. And the total ground state is just a product of all the plaquettes, so it's simple enough. And the Hamiltonian will also be almost look trivial because it's just a projection onto all the plaquettes. And then you can see that because this Hamiltonian is just projection, then you can have a gap between all the ground state and excited state in the bulk of the system. And again, yes?
The four particles within a block, how are they correlated? Do you have, like, projection to a spin two state? Or how do the four dots within a circle communicate?
Oh, the four circles, they don't communicate with each other. So they're totally separate.
I see. So the problem is separates into non-interacting squares.
So it's just the squares, the dots within the square, they will interact with each other, but each square will not interact with one another. The ground state is just a product state. So we can make this state totally trivial by breaking this square into totally product state. And if we can do that, then this is just a classical state. There can be no topological order whatsoever. But then the point is that we add some symmetry to the system, such that we cannot do this step. And I haven't shown you what the symmetry is, and that's the next slide. So the symmetry will be a Z2 symmetry. So the Z2 symmetry will act on site, which means that the operation will be on each site, and this is a global symmetry. And so the total symmetry operation will be a tensor product of separate operation on each site. And the symmetry actually is quite complicated. So first, you do a x operation on each spin, a two-level particle. So it's a 0 flip to 1, 1 flip to 0. It's the usual x in quantum information circuit. And if it's just this, then this is the Ising model. There can be no topological order. There can be symmetry breaking or symmetric state, but there can be no topological order. So I actually add another element to the symmetry, which is this this CZ between every two particles. So this is the control Z gate, which is if either of the two particles is in the zero state, it does nothing. But if both of them are in the one state, you add a minus sign.
I see. So this is how you
correlate. This is the symmetry of the system. This is not
interaction. Are you projecting into? Okay, please go ahead. Maybe I'll understand.
Yeah. So this is a weird symmetry of the system. But I should say that this symmetry looks weird only because we put the ground state in a very simple form. I can write the ground state in I can put a symmetry in a simple form like just x operation on each particle, but then the ground state will look complicated. So this is a trade-off. But I choose to make the ground state very simple, but the symmetry very complicated.
Sorry, what's the action of the symmetry? I mean, in which sense is this the symmetry?
So you can check that this product of Plaquette state of this 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, 1 is invariant under this symmetry. So
but
first,
what's the symmetry?
But it's a global. You have to do it on every.
Yes. Yes.
So on each side, you apply x to the four qubits, and then?
And then cz to every link, to four links at the same time.
So the action of the symmetry is apply first x's and then this. Okay. That's the
information. Yeah, so you can check that this is, they put together, they are again a z2 operation that you do twice, you get identity. And you can do a simple check that this is invariant because you do x to the state, it doesn't change. 0 to 1. And you do CZ, there will be a minus sign if two of them are 1, are both 1. Well, however, if these two are 1, these two are 1 also, because they're related. So the minus sign cancel out.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
OK. So you're saying that if you have this symmetry and you use transformations that commute with the symmetry, you're not allowed to bring it to the product state, right?
Yes.
So it's top. It's non-trivial. So my question is, so in 1D, if you only require a Z2 symmetry, I understand that it is still trivial, right?
In one dimensional with Z2 symmetry, there's no topological order.
Yeah, so you need Z2 times Z2 at least.
Yes, yes.
So in 2D, Z2 is enough. Why is that?
We actually find that in even dimension, Z2 can have one non-trivial topological order. And in all dimension, time reversal can have. Time reversal is.
There is a reason?
The reason is the group cohomology. So this is actually all related to the underlying reason for the non-trivial topological order I discussed here is all related to the group cohomology of the group. But I don't think I'll go into detail. Maybe I can tell you later what that is. But it's quite complicated, yeah. So the Z2. So this one dimension is related to the second group cohomology, and this two dimension is related to the third group cohomology. And actually, the third is non-trivial, and the second is trivial. So, with this symmetry, you can check that the ground state is actually invariant under this symmetry. And actually, if you want to put the ground state into total product state, you will find that whatever product state you want to put on the square lattice, it will violate this symmetry. For example, you put all zero here, it at once violates this x operation. But if you put all plus state here, it again violates this CZ operation. So you cannot actually do that. It must be an entangled state between the four blocks in order to satisfy this symmetry. So why does this symmetry generate topological order? Then we have to look at the boundary of the system, because we already confirmed that the bulk of the system is gapped. And then we want to make sure that the boundary of the system is gapless. So there's a very special feature on the boundary that's not present in the AKLT model I talked about before. So here, if you put the system on a disk and cut the boundary out, you will find the degrees of freedom left on the boundary are the half squares, so like this, half plaquettes. So two of the degrees of freedom remain in each plaquette on the boundary. And the two of them can be in 0-0 state, and it can be in 1-1 state. So it's the reduced density matrix of the two. So I label it by a 0 tilde and a 1 tilde. But however, this will have a very interesting interaction between the symmetry of the system and the effective degrees of freedom on the boundary, because this degrees of freedom is shared between sites. It's not totally localized on each site. So in the AKLT state, remember that degrees of freedom are localized on each site. So it's a single spin 1/2 on each site. And the symmetry will be, symmetry is on site. So on the boundary of the system, the symmetry is still acting on site. But here it's different. So the degrees of freedom is shared between site, and the symmetry is acting on site. So that means on the boundary of the system, there will be a very strange global non-on-site effective symmetry on the boundary. And that gives us the topological order. So we find that under this kind of special symmetry, the spectrum of the boundary is always gapless. And even if you add this order to the system, you cannot open up a gap. And we can actually prove this. So this is a step forward beyond the understanding of topological insulators. So in general, in topological insulators, people do a free fermion calculation, and then they add some kind of interaction and see whether it opens up a gap. But here, we can prove that whatever interaction you add, you cannot open up a gap.
This is just a naive question. What about the site on the corner?
Sorry?
The site on the corner?
Yes, that is on site.
So you said, you know, it's on boundary, it's always your degrees of freedom. It's shared between two sites.
Mm-hmm.
It just appears to me that the site on the corner is pretty much the same as
It doesn't matter that much. So I will show you that there's actually a very uniform description on the boundary. So this special point doesn't actually matter much.
So if you have two or three special points, it doesn't.
Okay.
Could you have picked some other Z2 symmetry?
The Z2 symmetry has to be very special. If you put the ground state in the simple form, then the Z2 symmetry has to be related to this non-trivial cohomology of Z2 group. And there's only one non-trivial group cohomology of Z2. So this is almost the only thing you can have. If you consider other groups, there are more possibilities.
From your picture, it looks as if the boundary excitations will be decoupled. They won't propagate in this particular case. They'll be all degenerate.
Not exactly. So this, so if you just cut it open and remove all the boundary Hamiltonian terms, then they will be degenerate. So there will be exponential degeneracy. But there can be interactions between these effective degrees of freedom. And that's the next slide I will show you. You can consider any kind of local interaction on the boundary. So basically, if you cut the system open, you are free to define the boundary condition on the boundary. Yes. You can introduce any interactions.
So to project out 0,1 and 1,0 state on the boundary, do you have to add Newtons in the Hamiltonian?
So
on the boundary,
uh-huh,
for two sides.
Yes.
In general, you have four states, right?
Right.
And then you keep only 0,0 and 1,1.
Oh, yeah. This is because the ground state, originally, it's 0,0,0 plus 1,1,1. So the low energy one will only be the reduced density matrix of the support of this entangled state. So it's only 0,0 and 1,1. The other two are higher energy. They are higher energy degrees of freedom.
Does that require Newtons in the Hamiltonian?
The what? Sorry?
New terms
in the Hamiltonian. This
Plunket term doesn't do anything to this two sides, right?
Yes. So, but in the ground state, there's only these two degrees of freedom. If you look at it, the other two are.
So you had a projection in the bulk.
Uh huh.
The question is, how does it change when you come to the boundary?
So I basically look at the ground state of the system. And then I trace out the degrees of freedom on the outside, and that's
my. So effectively, you have some boundary Hamiltonian.
Yes, that's coming from the. So it's actually the it's coming from the bulk, somehow. How should I say?
So those 2 degrees of freedom that you circled in green.
Yes.
They do not interact with the bulk, right? Because the Hamiltonian is just the Hamiltonian of plaquettes that commute. So
yeah, that's a I see.
So those 2 degrees of freedom are not interacting.
That's a good point. So actually, this is not exactly the Hamiltonian, because this one, this exact Hamiltonian, although it looks simple, it doesn't commute with the symmetry. So if you do want it to commute with the symmetry, you need the plugcast to interact. And that forces. Yes. Yeah, that's a I'm kind of cheating here. Huh? If you only take projection onto each plugcast, it's not going to commute with the symmetry, because symmetry is something acting on the four at the same time, so it's going to be bigger. But then you force everything to be only 0, 0 and 1, 1. If you force that in every among all the plugcasts that's involved on the neighboring the middle plugcast, then it's going to be commuting with the symmetry. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. This is an important point. Okay, so.
Another question. Yes. Apart from the gapless robust boundary excitations, the gap bug excitations, what kind of statistics do they have?
What kind of statistics? You mean in the bulk of the system, there will be no special statistics. So it's trivial. So it's just like topological insulator. You don't have fractional charge. You don't have fractional statistics. Yes, that's a very good point. That all the topological order I discuss here is like topological insulator. They are not like quantum Hall, fractional quantum Hall, or Z2 topological order, because there will be no degeneracy on high genus topology, because this is on a closed surface, the ground state is only going to be this product of plugcast states, and there's going to be no degeneracy, and there's going to be no fractional statistics whatsoever. Yes.
What do you mean by disorder in this case?
The what? Sorry.
Disorder.
Disorder.
Yeah. When you have disorder in the bulk, what do you mean by disorder?
So you can have non-translational invariant interactions between the effective degrees of freedom on the boundary.
Right. So are you talking about the genetic local Hamiltonian that
yes.
You could
have. But it's generic, or does it have to respect CZ?
It has to respect this effective symmetry, but yeah. Beyond that, there's no constraint. So now let's look at what kind of symmetry it is on the effective degrees of freedom. So I'm drawing this boundary here, and each circle is this 0 tilde and 1 tilde here. So it's just the boundary. I'm getting rid of the bulk. The bulk is gapped. I don't care about it. So the effective symmetry acting on the boundary will be, again, composed of two parts. One is this x on each dot. And so it's 0 to 1, 1 to 0. And again, there's this CZ operation between every two. So it's just like on a dot, but now it's on a bigger loop. And this is not this is a global symmetry, and it's not an on-site action. It's a very strange action. But then let's look at what kind of interactions we can have, what kind of local interactions we can have on the boundary of the system. So for example, one interaction you can have is this term. So you can have x acting on every side. So I'm getting rid of the tilde, sorry. So we can have x acting on each side, and then there's a zxz. This is like a cluster state or whatever interaction on this. So if you this term is symmetric under this symmetry. And if you calculate the spectrum, you will find that the system is gapless. But this is just one point. And then you can have other interactions. For example, this ZZ, this IC interaction is allowed. You can check that they actually commute with the symmetry. And but this one has symmetry breaking, spontaneously symmetry breaking. And you might also want to have a gapped symmetric phase, just like in IC case. So you can have polarized the spins in x direction, for example, and then everything will be, the ground state will be symmetric, then there will be gap in the system. You might want to add this term, but however, you can check that this doesn't commute with the symmetry, so this is not allowed. So we can have gapless spectrum, we can have symmetry breaking, and that's all. That's all we can have. We cannot have a gap symmetric state. And this is including disorder. So, so we find that because of this global non-on-site symmetry on the effective degrees of freedom, then and this is related to the non-trivial group cohomology of the Z2 group, we can actually prove using, again, the matrix product operator formalism that there can be no gap symmetric state phase exist under any kind of interaction that respect this symmetry. So it's either symmetry breaking or gapless. And the phase diagram will only be two part, one is symmetry breaking, one is gapless. So it can be either spontaneous symmetry breaking or explicit symmetry breaking, but that doesn't matter. So that means if you have a gapless mode, the gapless mode will be stable under whatever kind of disorder and interaction as long as the symmetry doesn't break. And this is exactly the case of topological insulator. So you have a gap in the bulk, and you have gapless mode on the boundary. And the gapless mode, of course, can be destroyed by breaking symmetry. It can be destroyed by breaking this Z2 symmetry. And in time, a topological insulator, it can be destroyed by breaking time reversal symmetry. But it cannot be destroyed by disorder. So in this sense, it's the same topological order as a topological insulator.
So in this topological insulator case, the boundary is very special in terms of its response, right? So if you infinitesimally break time reversal invariance, you will have, you know, a half quantized quantum Hall effect, for example. that's a fancy thing about topological insulator. People call it, you know, magnetoelectric response, not trivial, but it's just quantum Hall effect. So what is the analog of that in this case?
That's a very interesting question. I don't know. So,
is there a way? I mean, those boundary state, surface states, they're very special physically, right? You can feel why they're special. Is there some sort of like a operational definition of these states? Why are they? How to see that they are different from some, you know, accidental surface states in a trivial system?
This is, I think, a very important question because it's actually something we would like to know. So what kind of measurement can you do to detect this kind of topological order? If you just slightly, for example, slightly break the symmetry, what kind of things do you see? So in topological insulator, the picture is kind of clear, but it's because people can understand this topological insulator as two copies of quantum Hall, and then you slightly break one, you get into
one.
Okay. Yeah, right. But here we don't have a similar understanding like that. We don't see our example as coming from quantum Hall. So this because we take this perspective from many body entanglement to this topological order, so we lose the free fermion picture. So we actually, well, we did some numerics about what kind of boundary we can have. It's a central charge one, almost like free fermion, but we don't know what kind of special features we should be expecting. So that is actually a very interesting open question. So for this kind of topological order, what kind of things should you measure, especially on the boundary, to tell that this is non-trivial? We can prove that this is gapless, and that's it.
So can one understand topological insulator in the way you just described?
I believe yes. So the tricky point is that, so here I'm discussing bosonic system. Everything is spin and boson. So if you want to study a fermionic system, you need not group cohomology, but group cohomology with Grassmann number. So that's a kind of math we haven't figured out, but I believe so. I do think it's the same. So the features are all the same. So if you can actually do that, you have an interacting understanding of topological insulator.
So it seems that the key feature is that your global symmetry acts in a way that is not, in a way that is not local outside.
The effective symmetry on the boundary. So I believe that in topological insulator, if you took the boundary degrees of freedom out and put them in a local way on a ring, you will see that the effective symmetry will be like this. If it's just time reversal, then I don't see any reason why by breaking this order you cannot gap the system. Yes. So this is a new symmetry-protected topological order in interacting system that we have discovered. So actually, people only know for the symmetry protected topological order, it's only a topological insulator and topological superconductor. It's, I think there's no known example in bosonic system, and not known in interacting bosonic system especially. So, previously people know topological insulator, superconductor in free fermion, and then they know the gapless boundary is stable if you don't add, if you don't have interaction in the system, and has been classified for free fermion system. So what we have now is a strongly interacting boson, and hopefully we can generalize to fermion system. And the state is it's a toy model, and it's exactly solvable. And you find there's a gapless excitation on the boundary, and we can prove that the gaplessness is stable with even with interaction. And we make the connection to the underlying mass here. This is the group called homology. And because of this connection, we, our construction not only applies to this Z2 group, and actually applies to any symmetry in any dimension. And we can construct examples like this. So this is potentially very general, and general enough, we hope to classify all of the symmetry protected topological orders. So and now I want to say something about our approach, this many-body entanglement point of view to study topological order. So usually people study system by starting from a Hamiltonian, and then solve for the ground state, solve for the excitations, and see what kind of property the system have. So this is the phase diagram. From that point of view, you have free fermions, and then you add interaction to the system, and you see what happens. So our goal is to treat all the interactions on the same footing, so we don't need to take out the free fermion system as a special case. It's very interesting, of course, but there's no special reason why you don't consider interactions. So we want to consider all interactions on the same footing, and then we realize that we can actually do so, because in quantum phase transitions, it happens at zero temperature, and there's a gap. So everything about the system, every information should be there in the ground state, and the ground state should have a universal structure encoding all the phase information about the system. And the first thing we realize is that in order to study topological order in the ground state of the system, we need to look at the many-body entanglement structure. So if you have a totally product state like this, this kind of state, it can give you magnetic order, it can give you, they point, for example, they point in the same direction, they can give you symmetry breaking order, but they can not give you topological order, because the system will not care whether it's on an open geometry or not. But if you cut a segment or if you cut a disk, there will be no gapless excitations. So we need to consider this many-body entanglement structure, and different many-body entanglement structures actually will correspond to different topological orders. And this is where the matrix product state, tensor product state comes into play, because they generically include entanglement in the description of the system. And there's a lot of structure that you can see from this representation. So in my talk today, I'm only considering a very simple many-body entanglement structures like this. So you can have dimers put into a chain, or dimers put into a square lattice, or this plaquettes put into a square lattice. So it's just local degrees of freedoms entangle locally. And then the total state is still a product state. So if you don't have any constraint on the system, you can just locally disentangle them, and the system will become totally trivial. But however, if you require symmetry, as I've shown you, that there can be very non-trivial things going on here. And this is what we call the symmetry protected topological order. And because of this perspective that we take, by thinking of the condensed matter system from the entanglement point of view, this makes a natural connection to the quantum information problems. For example, suppose we have this one-dimensional dimer chain, and we can actually do some quantum computation. If we start with a single spin 1/2, and then we can do measurement, and then teleport the spin along, and do any kind of rotation to it as we teleport, and finally we get the computation result on a single qubit. Or we can, if we want interactions between the qubits, we can form a two-dimensional lattice like this dimer square lattice like this, and do measurement on it. And this is actually the measurement-based quantum computation picture here. But the point is not to create each dimer from scratch and then put them into a lattice and do the measurement-based quantum computation. The point is to find this structure in the physical system that's already hidden there. And hopefully this kind of system can be naturally realized in nature or in lab, and then we can do this quantum computation very easily. And this has actually been done in the example I talked about before, this 1D AKLT state and this 2D AKLT state. They have this short-range entanglement already embedded in the ground state of the system, and we can use them for measurement-based quantum computation. And that's actually a very exciting developments in recent years and involving people here. Very nice readout about how to use this kind of states to do measurement-based quantum computation. So this is so you can actually now measure each lattice site and propagate information along. So this is just the short-range entangled part. There can be a long-range entanglement beyond the picture I talked about before. So the long-range entanglement is something that you cannot just by locally do the unitary gaze to disentangle it into a totally product state. You actually cannot do any, you cannot smoothly deform the state without closing the gap of the Hamiltonian to turn a state into a product state. So it's not in the same phase with a triple product state, even if you don't require any symmetry. So this is any local operation, you cannot do that. And this is the kind of topological order that we call the intrinsic topological order. So it's more, it's stronger than the symmetry protected topological order. It doesn't require symmetry protection, and it will be stable against arbitrary perturbation even if they break any symmetry. And we know many examples like that. For example, the fractional quantum Hall, the torical, and the string net. And this is the stronger topological order that we want. And this kind of topological order will have more exotic features than the ones I've been talking about. For example, they have degeneracy, which depend on the topology of the system. They will care whether you put it on a sphere or on a torus. And it will have fractional charge and fractional statistics. And these are not present in all of the examples I talked about before. And of course, they have many quantum information applications to do quantum error correction, quantum memory, and finally quantum computation, which is for Torlent. And so then the goal is to study this kind of stronger topological order from this entanglement point of view. And actually, there has been many works from this to do this. And actually, we can start from the picture that we had before, this dimer lattice, and understand this long-range entanglement by adding one more element, which is gauge symmetry. So we need this entangled pair and gauge symmetry on each side, and then we can have good understanding of this long-range entanglement. For example, this torical, we have this dimer lattice, and then we can force gauge symmetry on each lattice side. That is, we only allow even configuration on each side to appear. Then we can this describes the ground state of the torical. And actually, we can find from this the ground state degeneracy, the fractional charge, the fractional statistics, all from this entangled pair plus gauge symmetry structure. So this is an open direction about how we can have a more general picture of all the long-ranging of all the intrinsic topological order with long-ranging tangled ground state by considering things like this. So now we'll how am I doing with time? Oh, I'm not using that much time. Let's see. So finally, the outlook. So this, by taking this point of view from many-body entanglement, we actually make a connection between topological order and quantum information. And there are many exciting directions to going into. And for example, we might want to have a complete understanding of all the topological order in condensed matter system, or we can study the phase transition between topological orders, how to use entanglement structure to understand the critical point. I guess people here have more insights about this than me. And this understanding about entanglement structure will help us to design more efficient algorithm to simulate quantum many-body system using this tensor product and the mirror and the matrix product algorithm. And then finally, how this kind of condensed matter system with topological order can help us with stable storage and processing of quantum information. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
You repeatedly mentioned about group cohomology. Can you spend 2 minutes just to give a caricature?
I can give you the simplest case. So the zero solder group cohomology, so you start from a group, for example, Z2. And the zero solder group cohomology is the one-dimensional representation of the group. So it's a 1 or minus 1 for Z2. That's a one-dimensional group cohomology. That's the first order group cohomology of Z2 group. And the second order group cohomology is projective representation. So it's like a half integer representation of spin rotation. Spin 1/2 is a projective representation of SO3 rotation. And spin 1 is the trivial representation of SO3 rotation. So that's the projective representation. And third group cohomology is something. So basically, I can say it like this. So the first group cohomology is you act the operation on the state, you get a face. So it's action up to a face. The state is invariant, but you get a face in front of it. So it's action up to a face. The second group cohomology is commutation up to face, or group multiplication up to face. So you want rotation by 2 pi to be 1, but however, it gives you a minus 1. But that's allowed in quantum mechanics because you don't care about the global phase. So second group cohomology is multiplication, group multiplication up to phase. And the third group cohomology is associativity up to phase. And the fourth group cohomology is something. I don't remember. The third one is associativity up to phase. But associativity up to phase is no longer a representation. It's not matrix representation because matrix, they are associative. So it's beyond that. So that's why we use this matrix product operator representation to deal with this kind of thing.
So all of this was at zero temperature.
Yes.
So do you have any idea what happens to these phases at finite temperature?
They're like topological insulators.
Like topological insulators, in what sense?
All the finite temperature features should be the same, I guess. But this is basically zero temperature. Yes.
But are there like phase transitions or?
That I don't know. Huh? That I don't know. Yeah, I'm only considering. So it's basically ground state and ground state entanglement. So it's zero temperature. But there's a gap, so. I don't know what happens on the boundary if you have a finite temperature.
So I'd like to go back to this question of boundary term in your Bozonian model.
Boundary term?
Yeah.
So okay.
In topological insulator, my understanding is that you cannot destroy the gapless edge mode as long as you keep the symmetry by adding any Hamiltonian on the boundary. But it seems that in your example, it was important to keep only 0,0 and 1,1 state on the boundary. But somehow if I add some new term on the boundary that lowers the energy of 1,0 or 0,1,
So I'm assuming that the bulk gap is very large and the effective action on the boundary is just perturbative. You only do first order perturbation. Don't bring the higher energy in the bulk to the.
But is it same in the topological insulator? So suppose we are allowed to add any Hamiltonian on the boundary without destroying the bulk gap. Then don't we have a stable gapless mode on the boundary? No matter how large the perturbation is on the boundary.
If you don't close the bulk gap, you don't bring the higher energy one down here, right? Sorry, I don't think I understand the question.
Yeah, so my question is following. Suppose we are allowed to any terms on the boundary.
Yes.
Boundary Hamiltonian.
Any term.
While keeping the symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the example of topological insulator, the gapless mode at the boundaries is protected.
Mm-hmm.
In your example, is it so?
Yes. So if you keep the bulk gap very large,
right.
and to infinity, right. and then whatever perturbation you add can only be on this 0, 0 and 1, 1 on the boundary.
But wasn't it important to keep only 1, 1 and 0, 0 state on the boundary?
Yes.
Suppose I add some local Hamiltonian on the boundary,
mm-hmm.
which lower the energy of 1, 0 and 0, 1.
But that is at infinity. So if whatever finite action you add cannot bring them down. And actually, the 0, 1 and 1, 0 will violate the symmetry also. So they're not allowed. If you preserve the symmetry, you cannot bring those two down. Yeah, so this is, so we have this picture about two-dimensional entanglement. So I think I can do this. Basically, it's so instead of having this bond, you have this loop structure in two dimension. That's the picture I have. So in order to efficiently do this tensor network renormalization, you need to somehow get rid of the loops. I think that's one idea I get out of this study. So this loop structure is important. And usually they're just short-range entanglements. So when you do the renormalization, you want to get rid of them. But in the current algorithms, they just don't go away. They always stay there. So you need something to get rid of these loops. And otherwise, the bound dimension will grow. Yeah, that's one thing I learned from here.
So I was wondering if you could comment on the relationship then to the mirror where the disentangling tensors lie exactly where those loops are indicated in between the that's a good one. I was wondering if you could comment on the relationship to the mirror, because if the individual degrees of freedom were separate lattice sites, then that would represent the same sort of disentangling structure as you see in a mirror. But here your degrees of freedom are actually, rather than being separate lattice sites, you've got 4 degrees of freedom within a site. So I was wondering if you could comment on similarities and differences there, I suppose.
I'm not very familiar with the details of mirror, but I guess so here the site idea is important because we need to define the symmetry. But of course, if you don't require symmetry, then everything is simple. You just consider the 4 entangled to be on one side as just definition of which one is site. Sorry, maybe I don't get your point, but this state is simple enough, but. If you want a more generic numerical algorithm to get rid of any kind of loop entanglement, and that's more complicated. I think maybe you guys have more idea about how to do this in mirror. I don't have much to comment.